Welcome to Everyday Martial Artist, a weekly podcast where you'll join me, Brian Doucette, as I interview a different martial artist each episode and hear their story. Some guests you may have heard of, and some you probably haven't. Be sure to subscribe where all your favorite podcasts are available. Also, visit our website at everydaymartialartist.com. If you're listening for a specific interview, I sure hope you'll stay and check out the other episodes. A very special thank you to Topher Williams for our custom theme music. And now, the newest episode of Everyday Martial Artist. Everyday Martial Artist is brought to you by KOOnline.com for all your martial arts needs. Sparring and safety gear, rank belts, uniforms, weapons, patches, and more. Wholesale supplies made by martial artists for martial artists. Visit us today at KO-Online.com. Hello and welcome to Everyday Martial Artist. I'm your host, Brian Doucette. And as we do every week, we're joined by a brand new guest talking about their life and their journey throughout the world of martial arts. My guest today has been studying martial arts for almost 40 years and earned her fifth degree black belt in 2015. She competed actively on the NASCA circuit from 1996 to 2000 with her last Diamond Nationals in 2014. She was a number one ranked 18 to 29 female black belt in the open and musical creative forms division. She studied numerous styles of martial arts over the years and is also a certified personal and group fitness trainer and the owner of Fit 15 Martial Arts and Fitness in Dripping Springs, Texas. Please welcome my guest today, Catherine Cat Miller. How are you doing today, Catherine?
I am doing all right. Thank you very much. That was a great intro.
Thank you. I take pride in that. A lot of my guests seem to enjoy the intros. I've had a few actually say, can you send me a copy of that when we're done?
So I think that's great. You know, I mean, most of the time people have like a hard time talking about themselves when somebody else can be like, hey, they did this and this. And you're like, yes, I did. I did do that. That's cool.
I've actually had a couple of guests tell me they've sent their episode with me to other podcasts. Say, listen to the first 2 minutes and that'll tell you about me. So, okay.
Fantastic. There we go.
Well, what we like to do with all my guests, I know I mentioned you've been doing it almost 40 years. You started back in, you know, around the same time as me. I started in 84. I think you started in 86. Mm-hmm. But what I want to know is what led to that? Where did that first interest in martial arts come from? Where was that first spark from that kicked off your martial arts journey?
There are two stories that go with that. The first one is that my father and my brother started a couple months before I did. My father got a 2 or 3 month pass as a Christmas present from one of his coworkers, and he took my brother, who was 4 years younger than I am. And they both started taking classes. And, you know, at the time, my mom, I had to go with them. And my brother's class obviously wasn't at the same time as my father's class. So they had did the, you know, kid switcheroo and handoff and whatever. So I ended up spending a lot of time in the lobby just kind of watching what was going on. And I started being interested then. And I don't know, 2, maybe 3 months into my father and my brother's training, they had an exam. And there's this young woman named Corey Monson testing for her red belt. And she did a form called Noriuk, which means striving for perfection. Okay. And she did this like straight up and down sidekick. And it was this kata or forms or patterns or the chance you get to like compete with yourself because it's just you mm-hmm. doing the pattern. And I was like, I want to do that. I wasn't too keen on getting like punched in the face, but like I can stand there and look like I'm punching other people. And that was great. Yes. So I saw that and I thought, I'm going to do it. And then of course, Mr. Schindler said, you know, Mrs. Miller, you don't really want her to be learning anything incorrectly sitting in the lobby. So she might as well be in class.
Nice.
So there you go. That's how I started.
That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So then think about maybe your first handful of classes. What stands out? What are some of the memories you have about that instructor and about some of the things you did in class that kind of drew you in and made you want to keep going?
Another story. So Mr. Schindler, Mark Schindler, at the time he was about 22, 23. And, you know, training with under John Worley, Larry Carnahan, John Longstreet, all the big kickboxing guys. So he was also getting the kickboxing. So he was a tad on the intimidating side. He was like 6'2", you know, 200 pounds or something like that. And we were practicing sidekicks on the wall. And he was holding the body shield for me. And I didn't lock and hold my sidekick. And I pulled it back too soon. And he squished me on the wall. So I remember that. And I remember the feeling of, oh, this is my thing. You know, you for yourself training, like the first couple of classes, you look at the people around you and you can say, oh, well, maybe that person is just starter. Maybe they're not that into it. But you start and you're like, this is it. This is the thing I have to do. And that's what I felt like because I was never big into team sports. I was a little too shy. I felt really uncoordinated. I didn't really want to do dance or gymnastics like the other girls, but kicking and punching, I was like, yeah, I can do that. It felt good. Felt right.
Nice. So then what led you, you know, not wanting to do other sports and not being interested in that, what led you to the competition side of martial arts? Because that obviously became pretty important, you know, in your martial arts journey. So what kind of led to that?
That after I graduated from college, came back home to Minnesota and started teaching. I was an assistant instructor. And, you know, National Karate and John Loyley, Larry Carnahan, they put on the Diamond Nationals. And so, of course, big pressure to have lots of students represent National Karate out there at the tournament. And I did a team form with two other ladies that made it to the Diamond stage. And I ended up kind of in a fluke, not a fluke, but I won my division. It was the first time I ever competed as a black belt at the Diamond Nationals. I beat Michelle Mouse Krasno, if you remember her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
I beat her. And then I made it on the stage and I was like, oh, well, maybe I can kind of do this. And so then that was it.
So you never competed as a kid? Not till you were a black belt?
One time.
Wow. Talk about that very first time. What happened that time?
It was also at a Diamond Nationals. I was really? A green belt, right? And we were doing the National Karate specific divisions. Mm-hmm. And I got second place out of two. I was very proud of myself. And I'd competed a handful of times in underbelt in forms more than sparring because, like I said, I really don't like getting punched. I mean, not my thing. But I do remember I competed against my brother once. He was a red belt and I was a blue belt and he beat me and he remembers that to this day that he beat me.
That's a good brother.
I know, right? It's a standard brother line. Yeah.
That's kind of funny. Now, think back to the first time you went to the Diamond Nationals just to watch. What, you know, with never experiencing something like that before. Because I remember that I never competed the Diamonds, but I went and watched many times. And I remember my first, you know, just seeing specifically that, like the Saturday night event, you know, the main event. What were some of the things you remember just seeing something like that for the first time?
Oh, it was incredible. That the year that I went, I actually still have the ticket from it, was the year that John Longstreet got the light heavyweight kickboxing title. He beat some French guy. So that was part of the nighttime show. And it was when the Flexmaster split machine. Remember that? Yeah, right.
Oh,
that,
yeah. We had one in our school. Yep.
Absolutely. We all did, right? Yep. And that was when it was first introduced. And Charlie Lee and Ernie Reyes Jr. Nope, it was Eddie Landa were up there demonstrating it. And so Charlie Lee, you know, grounded up to like 165 and Eddie Landa grounded up to like 210 degrees, you know, in the splits. And that was also when Mad Dog was competing. Yeah, it was a long time ago, man.
I got to ask Charlie. That's one thing. When I interviewed Charlie, he never mentioned that. I'll have to text him later and ask him about his demonstrating the Flexmaster. That's kind of funny.
Nice. I'm hoping it was Charlie Lee because if it wasn't, it was John Chung. But I know that John Chung was more flexible, right?
Okay. Yeah. I know because my first time going just to watch was, I think it was 1990. Because I was 16 and I convinced my parents to let us drive down there. I'm trying to remember. We either convinced them or we just told them we were going to St. Cloud for the day because I grew up in Little Falls. And I think we just drove to the cities.
Rebel. Awesome.
The next year, I think they let us go. But yeah, my friend Sean was competing. He was an orange belt and he was competing. And I remember we went just to watch him mainly. And we weren't even going to stay for the final. And we went and watched him and he comes home with this 5-foot trophy and stuff. And he's like, oh, you guys got to stay for the Saturday night event. We're like, okay, fine. So we did. And I think we called my mom and said we were, you know, going to a movie in St. Cloud or something like that. And then, yeah, went down there. And it was funny. A few years later, my mom started going with us and watching. So it was kind of cool. But yeah, I remember it was either 90 or 91. I remember one of the kids that won was took second place with Ashley Lane.
Ashley Lane. Oh, yep. Yeah, with those the sidekicks in the circle.
Yep, and she did it. I think it was the song "Kung Fu Fighting," and she did her form too. So that was one of the first ones I remember. And Carmichael Simon and John Chung, a lot of those guys we used to watch compete. Yeah, because I went, I think 90 through 95 to watch, nice. And then 97 through 2000. I think 2000 was the last time I've been to the Diamonds.
Wow. So
I know I need to go back. It was funny. I was actually down for a business conference. I was working at a bank. I was at a business conference about 5 years ago. It was right before COVID. And the conference ended on the Friday morning and I got my suitcase and I'm walking. I see these kids running by me in martial arts uniforms. I'm like, it can't be. There's no way. And I follow them and I'm like, holy crap, the Diamonds is going on here this week. And I wish I would have known. Because I had to go, my ride was leaving in like 20 minutes. I had to go back, but it would have been so cool to stay. So, So what was your, you did musical forms a lot. So what was your favorite song to perform to?
Oh, Blur, song two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That was the one. And normally, and this is to the best of, you know, my aged recollection, is that women competing inspire silence for the artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And men competing are like, because a lot, at least, you know, back then, the athleticism was far more dynamic, you know, jumping, spinning, flying, all that stuff. So people, like the crowd really got into it. And like, you could hear a pin drop, like when Suzanne Wankett would do her form, or even like Ming Lu, you know, and the song too, because it has that woohoo. And I just remember everybody around the ring doing that for me.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So do you remember a song you tried once that you were so excited to try it, and then you tried it once and it was like, yeah, that's not a good fit?
I did it to It's Raining Men.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
It was a good time. I don't know if it worked really well, but it was a fun song.
I don't picture that one. Wow. Nice. So other than the Diamonds, where were some of your favorite tournaments to compete at?
Oh, jeepers. I really liked the U.S. Open. Had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Who did the Phoenix tournament? There was a tournament in Arizona. It wasn't one of the bigger ones, but man, that was a really good time. I had a great time with that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, like, I really had an awesome time everywhere I went. Like, I went to compete, went to Kentucky, Florida, you know, Boston. Yeah, I had a really good time at all the tournaments. I like, everybody is so, I feel like with, and I call it like, quote unquote, like fringe sports, the people are like way nicer. They're not as, like, you know, like road cycling, they're pretty persnickety, like snooty, or like gymnastics. There's just the feeling of being like in a martial arts tournament or like a mountain bike race or something, where people are like a little bit more laid back, and like everybody's there for everybody else, and they cheer for everybody. And it's just a really, really awesome community and sense of camaraderie.
Who do you think was your biggest rival? Who was the one who was, it was always you and her in the finals? Was there Ming one Lu. Person? Was it Ming Lu? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, she was good. She was fun to watch too. So, good time. You had mentioned teaching. When did that become something that interested you?
Jeepers. Before I tested for my black belt, like requirements for at red belt, like testing for brown belt and brown belt testing for black stripe, you had to assist in the classroom.
Okay.
And had to have, you know, so many hours, like 10 hours or 15 hours of assisting. And I was like, oh, okay, I can. This is great. And then I went to college and came back home and was, you know, kind of hanging out looking for a job. And I went back, of course, to taking classes. And the person running the school that I was going to, the Eden Prairie National Karate School, needed an assistant instructor. And he's like, hey, do you want to do it? I was like, sure. And that's it. So 1995 is when I started working there. And then I worked there, worked for National Karate all the way until right before I got married in 2001.
Wow.
And moved away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So think back to then, some of those first few classes you were assisting to now, where you're still teaching through your fitness center. What do you think has changed about your teaching style over the years?
I believe I've gotten, I don't want to say I've relaxed a little bit, but I think I've become more relaxed. I probably give the kids way more grace now than I did then.
Okay.
When I would get stuck on drills, when I first started, I'd just have everybody go back to the wall for slow kicks. I don't know what to do. Okay, everybody back to the wall. Let's go. And John Longstreet, he was like the vice president for a while. And he's sort of in charge of, like, he was like hands-on in the schools, watching the instructors to see how they're teaching and making sure the curriculum was well set and well delivered. And he would like sneak into schools every now and then. Like he'd go incognito, like with the ball cap on and big sweatshirt or something like that, thinking that people wouldn't recognize him. But every now and then I'd see him out of the corner of my eye, and it used to like frazzle me so much that I would do the same thing. Like, okay, everybody slow kicks. Cause I couldn't think of anything else to do, because there's, you know, the vice president, John Longstreet, and he's sitting there. And then after about a year of working there, I used to catch him. I'd see him walk in and I'd go, hey, everybody, face grandmaster Longstreet, he's coming in the door. Everybody give him a salute. And so it would like take some of the wind out of his sails.
That's kind of cool.
I've tried to, in my teaching now, and I think it's just because I'm old, to really impart the life lessons that being a martial artist teaches you. Far okay. more, I think, than any other, like baseball or football or any yeah. other team sport. It's how you communicate with people. It is how you communicate with the world around you. How you carry yourself into and out of situations is incredibly important. Doing a martial art, you really learn how to navigate boundaries mm-hmm. and people who are coming into and going out of your boundaries and what you're going to do about them. And in a not even in a combative way, but just being in that situation where you have to face a person and you're knowing that they're throwing kicks and punches at you is not all that different from trying to navigate a discussion or an argument or an initial meeting on the street. Like you have to figure out what kind of energy that they are bringing and you have to figure out your energy. And then you have to figure out, do I want to have a conversation with this person? Like we've all done those like sparring sessions that just feel great because it's just the two of you like talking back and forth, doing a flow, not necessarily trying to win
yeah.
or beat the other person, but you're really just figuring out your tools and your expression and how you say that, how you say what you want to say, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I've tried to concentrate more on that so that even if the kids decide not to train in the martial arts, you know, for more than a year or 2 years, that they will say, oh, you know, 10 years from now, you know what, my instructor told me that when I was talking to so-and-so, I can do this with my body or whatever, you know?
Right.
That they remember that.
Nice.
Does that make sense? Hopefully.
Yeah, perfect sense. Yeah. So your prime time in the martial arts and competition was in that, you know, mid 90s range. And a lot of your counterparts were, you know, going into movies and TV shows. You know, a lot of people from WMAC Masters were all competing in the NASCA circuit. Was that ever something that crossed your mind or maybe you considered trying to get into?
I did. You know what, man, the only thing I do really well is kick and punch and yell. Like I can give some really good face. That's what Yvette Vargas used to always tell me. Girl, mm-hmm. you give such good face. But I can't jump or spin or flip or like fall really well. Like okay. I can stand up and punch and kick people and I can look really good and I can sell it doing it. But any of that other athleticism is beyond me. You know? I did get to do pre-viz fight choreography for a low budget film called The Green Ghost. Not too long ago, actually in 2015, 2016.
Okay.
Because I am still friends with Carmichael Simon. He lives here in Austin.
That's right. Yes.
And I also still kind of indirectly with Arnold Chan. And Arnold was one of the choreographers working on this movie. You know, Arnold's been in all kinds of movies, right? Mm-hmm. So he called Carmichael, said, hey, are there any female martial artists in the area that can do this stuff? And he said, sure. Yeah. Kat Miller's here. Give her a call. So I got to work with Arnold. I got to meet Marco Zaror and work with him and Freddie Poole and yeah, it was a great time. Got to meet Danny Trejo. It was fun.
Oh, really? That's kind of cool.
It was very cool. I had a really good time.
I've heard talked to a few people who have met him and said he's just a super cool guy to talk to. So
very, very cool man.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, Carmichael Simon. He was one of the, I think one of, he might have been the first like NASCA person that actually said yes to doing my podcast when it first started. He was in my first year. And I remember I reached out to him on social media, just said, hey, here's me. Here's a link. Well, I'd love to interview you. I used to watch you compete when I was younger and stuff. And he responded back. He's like, I'm free in 15 minutes. I'm like, okay.
Let's do it. Yeah. He's
literally my fastest turnaround ever for an interview.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. He's such a cool guy. So knowledgeable and very zen in his approach to everything. He's still really big in the martial arts community in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, he was super fun to talk to, and that, you know, him saying yes kind of opened the doors for a lot of other people to say yes. So that was kind of cool. It's him and I think Francis Pineda's probably recommended the most guests to my show of anyone.
I dig him too. Yeah,
I love he's that. Awesome. But yeah, Carmichael mm-hmm. was episode 30. So that's a
wow.
Yeah,
that's who's the first person you interviewed?
First one was a gentleman named Tom Bleeker. He's an author. He was a black belt under Ed Parker, and he was good friends with Bruce Lee, and actually married Linda Lee after Bruce, years after Bruce passed away. But he's written a few different books. He also wrote a book that's huge in the Kenpo community called The Journey, where he featured like 30 of the most prominent Kenpoists in the world and kind of told their story and stuff. So he was the first one. It was kind of a interesting story how I met him and stuff and kept in contact with him. And yeah, but he was my first one. But yeah, Carmichael was episode 30, and you're going to be episode 166.
Wow, so. Way to go. Good so, longevity, man. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's going well. I'm definitely enjoying it a lot. Now, I think you mentioned in the emails to me that you've studied other martial arts too. Kind of, first of all, what led to you starting to cross train and branching out, and what was the first style or the first secondary style you picked up?
Man, I started doing boxing. Did I box first? Yes, I started doing boxing. And the reason I picked up boxing is because I'm getting older and my legs just don't want to come up off the ground as much. I'm like, man, these legs are thick and they're slow and I don't want to kick really high anymore. I think I'd better be better with my hands. Okay. So I started taking boxing, and I like boxing because it's very, the movement is more like Eastern. It's more circular, whereas, you know, Taekwondo is all linear. And I wanted to be able to add that to my repertoire. And I really enjoy the heck out of boxing and boxing training. That is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a good workout.
Yeah, right? Yeah, provided just a way different dimension for me. And especially because I really have never, ever enjoyed sparring. But I met a group of people who really made sparring an enjoyable experience for me. And that was a first. So boxing. And then I started working at a summer camp called Camp Half Blood. And if you've read any of the
Percy Jackson, I haven't read the books, but I've seen the movies and watched the TV series because I have kids. So
yes. So they've got a real live Camp Half Blood.
That's
in
awesome.
Austin. Oh man. If they had had this summer camp when I was a kid, it's freaking awesome. It's like the ultimate bookish introverted kid camp. Because
really?
They based it off of Percy Jackson. So the camp is Camp Half Blood, and the director of the camp works very closely with Rick Riordan. So all the kids get claimed in the claiming ceremony. They fill out a questionnaire, and then they determine who their godly parent is. And then Rick Riordan comes on and introduces himself. They hire local actors and stunt people to actually play some of the gods and goddesses and the the monsters. And it's so cool because the kids get to learn archery and they get to learn sword play with one of the most amazing martial artists I've ever met. And then they hired me to be a stunt person because I just was working with a lot of the martial artists in the community. And they said, oh, you should apply for this job. And they really, at the time, they wanted to find more strong female characters who could fight. So my interview went with Topher Bradfield, who's the director of the camp, and he goes, hey, so what are you good at? And I said, well, I can yell really loud and I can look really mean. He said, great. How about you be a bad guy? I was like, no problem. I will be a bad guy. So I got to walk around McKinney Falls Park in real leather armor, carrying a Starfire freaking katana for 10 weeks in the summer. And I was like, this is the best game ever. I love this. So I got to do some sword. I know. I got to do sword fighting and like stage fighting, combat. And it was the best. But the people I met there, so Master Damon Stith, I don't know if you've talked to him yet, but man, that man is an interesting.
No. Name down.
I will send it to you. I'll send him to you. He's the president of the Historical African Martial Arts Association.
Okay.
He is a capoeirista. He is a master African swordsman and regular, but the man, I have never seen anybody move the way that Master Damon moves. And the group that he trains with are the ones who really taught me that Taekwondo is very one-dimensional and it is not enough of an alphabet to have a good conversation with somebody who doesn't move like a Taekwondo person. And that's certainly no disrespect to Taekwondo or anything, because it's given me a really, really strong base, right? Because you learn kicks, you learn punches, you learn how to stand, you learn how to move. But moving against somebody who doesn't move in a traditional manner, in an expected manner, is a really, that makes it a very difficult conversation to have, I think. Right. And I refer to sparring as like conversations. But they had so much fun And they taught me so much about how angles work and how your movement works and how you don't have to necessarily lock yourself into a traditional stance or kick. Like a roundhouse kick can be applied in so many different ways. And you don't have to be standing up to do it. Like you can have a hand on the ground. You can do it from the floor. You can do it. And it's just freaking fantastic. So I've been training with them. Master Damon does, like I say, capoeira. So I do capoeira every now and then, except that my body doesn't necessarily move like that. You know, like I've tried like kung fu and wushu to like, wow, I am really made to be a hardstyle martial artist. Like I am an earthbender. Like that's me.
Nice.
Right? No, I am not fire, not air, not water.
I know. That's one style I always wanted to try was capoeira, but I was like, yeah, some people just aren't built for it, I don't think.
I'm not built for it, but it is so much fun. And yeah, but boxing is I would say more primary than any of the other ones that I've said. A little bit of kickboxing, a little bit of Muay Thai.
Okay.
But boxing and taekwondo are my wheelhouses. Is where I live.
So ever have any interest to compete in a like an amateur boxing match?
Ooh, no, man, those ladies hit hard. No, thank you. No. I am 51. I need to keep everything in my head that is there now because it's just rapidly dwindling.
I don't see me too. I guess I've done it in class, but I'd never want to actually get into the ring. I've trained some MMA fighters in the past, and I remember one time I was training a gentleman, and he had he admitted to me 6 weeks before his fight, yeah, just, you know, I've never actually been hit in the face before. I'm like, what? Like, you're getting in a cage in 6 weeks. So yeah, put on two boxing headgears to like pad on my biggest boxing gloves I could find. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to hit you hard, but you need to see. And I less than 50% power. And he's like, ow. I'm like, what do you mean ow? Like, that was nothing.
You have a fight coming.
Yeah. But we spent the next 6 weeks getting, and he got to the point where I was hitting him pretty hard, and he won the fight. So that was good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
There you go, coach.
But it was like, wow. Yeah. When he told me that 6 weeks before a fight, I'm like, okay, you're in the wrong business.
Right. Did he continue fighting after that? Or
he ended up, I think he did two fights. His job made him quit because he was a manager and he was coming in with bruises and stuff and black eyes. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, he had to quit, but he was good. Technically, he went 1-1. One of his fights ended in a disqualification. I don't know how much you follow MMA, but one of the rules is you can't hit someone in the head when they're down. You can't knee him in the head when they're down. And this guy hit him, and the guy was falling. And right as his hand touched the mat, he brought his knee up and hit him in the head. So technically, it was an illegal hit. And even the guy afterwards, he's like, dude, you won that fight. I don't care what the judges say. You kicked my butt. So unofficially, he's 2-0. Officially, he's 1-1. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good. That was like 15 years ago. So, in my younger days too. So, nice. So, mm-hmm. When did you decide to get involved into the fitness side of things?
Because being a martial arts instructor is not as transferable a skill as one might think. Right? You know, you can't just walk into another Taekwondo school and be, "Hi, I'm a black belt. Can I teach here?" Like, you know, they don't.
That is true.
Right. They don't like that. So my then husband was stationed at Fort Campbell, and I just started going into the gym on post, and the director, the athletic director, aerobic director there asked me if I wanted to learn cardio kickboxing. At that time, Turbo Kick. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that was really big, and it was sort of after the Taibo era, and then Shalene Johnson came up and she branded her Turbo Kicks out. So I got certified in that, and then I got a group fitness certification after that. So this was like 2003, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, so 2003, I got my group fitness certification and cardio kickboxing certification, and then I just stuck with that because I didn't know how long we were going to be in the Army. So I knew that there are gyms on post or there are gyms in town, and I could always get a job that way. And that would a job that would allow me to take care of kids if I needed to, or take people to appointment, because it's not like a 9-to-5 thing or a 40 mm-hmm. hour week thing.
Right.
So it allowed me that type of a freedom. And then sadly, my now ex-husband, he was injured and had to get out of the Army. So then we moved to Austin, and then I got a job at Progressive Insurance and their on-site gym for their employees. And from there, I got my personal training certification, and I've been in that world kind of ever since.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And did you find it easy to blend the martial arts and the fitness together? And how did your students accept that?
Yes. I will say yes, I found it easy to blend them together. I honestly think that all martial arts instructors should take a group fitness certification because it really teaches you about the body and all the muscles. And I feel like you should know what you're asking people to do with what muscles if they're doing things physically with them. And I, even if I'm not teaching a strict like martial arts class, like everybody, almost everybody likes to hit things.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when I say, hey, would you like to incorporate, you know, some punching and kicking into your workout? They're like, well, of course. Yes. So it makes it easy.
Now, one thing I forgot to ask you, when you were doing competing and you were in forms, did you ever do the weapons competition?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I consider myself to be a real danger to myself with a weapon. But I did. I like the bow staff.
Okay.
It means my both hands are on the same weapon all the time. And I really like that.
Okay.
And I was on John Chung's team for a little bit.
Okay.
And we had to do more than one division. And I was like, what do you mean? You know, open and musical are not two divisions? He said, no, they're kind of the same thing. I was like, oh, deeper, sir. So I do weapons. He made me spar a couple of times. I was like, man, Master Chung, wow. I don't want to do this. but anyway, so one time I competed with the bow staff and I beat Casey Marks.
Wow.
Because she stepped on her hakama and tripped.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, it was a not happy win for me. because I love Casey. She's amazing.
Yes.
Nobody wants to have an equipment malfunction like that. But it was, she says, they're like, you got what in weapons? I was like, yeah, I got first place. Are you gonna be on stage? I was like, I really hope not. Be terrible for everybody involved. But yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, Casey's been on the show too. Actually, Casey, John, and Charlie have all been on the show. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get Michael Bernardo, but so far no luck. Wow. I'm really, really hoping to get him on the show. So
yeah, he gave me my very first 10.
Really?
At the Battle of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, so then with your background in sport martial arts and competition and boxing and everything, what are your thoughts on MMA and the UFC, and is that something you're a fan of?
That's a good question. I would say yes, I am a fan.
Okay.
Because I know that all of the high-level competitors are multiple like black belt style holders most of the time. And I appreciate the dedication to one style, and I appreciate the humility to want to learn multiple styles, because again, it's about being able to have a better conversation. And so if I only know how to talk about one thing, it doesn't make me a very good conversationalist. Same as like, if you only have one style, for want of a better phrase, under your belt, it makes it difficult to compete at that level. I mean, you know, like Amanda Nunez, notwithstanding. But yeah, so the breadth of experience of the competitors, I really admire and I really respect that. I, you know, and everybody's got different personalities. I don't respect showboating personalities. I just can't.
Yeah.
But does that detract from the skill and the skills that they had to learn and the competitive spirit and the willingness to train like that? No, not at all. So it's cool.
Okay. So you're near Austin is where you are?
Yes, I am in Dripping Springs, which is billed as being just west of Weird.
Okay. I don't know Texas that well. Do you know how close you are to Hillsboro, Texas?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think it's north of Waco, I believe.
So Waco's an hour and a half away?
Okay. I was just curious because I know one of my listeners trains at a Taekwondo school in Hillsboro. So I wasn't sure if it was close at all or in any way connected or anything, but can't remember the name of the school. I should know it. And if he's listening, I'm sorry, Josh. He's a dedicated listener. It's a Hillsboro Eagles Unified Taekwondo is the name of it.
Oh, nice.
I was just curious.
Oh, it says 2 hours and 53 minutes.
Okay. Cool.
From me.
Mm-hmm. I've had a handful of guests I've talked to from Texas, so I always like to see if maybe they're near each other or not.
Nice. I get to run into Wayne Wynn every now and then. He's in Houston.
Okay.
And has a tournament circuit here. So nice. I just went back to a local tournament last year Because I've got one of my assistant instructor is the president of the high school martial arts club from Dripping Springs High School.
Okay.
And so he took his couple of guys that he was been training to the tournament. And so I went back and I was like, wow. Okay. So I got to talk to Master Nguyen and some of the other local school owners, Chance Turner and all those guys hanging out. It was sort of like being back on the scene. It was cool.
So do you ever think you'd have an interest of starting to teach an actual traditional, you know, martial arts program again?
No.
No?
I don't. I do. I teach kids martial arts here. I would call it striking arts. Like I teach the striking arts to the kids.
Okay.
At my studio. But no, I think that I would be happier leaving that to somebody who's younger and closer to it. Like it's been a long time since I've been up to, you know, National Karate and trained there and been involved in a real like curriculum guided traditional type of martial art. So
when was the last time you went back just to watch the Diamonds? Or has it been a while?
Oh man, it's been a while. Yeah, I think 2014, 2015, whenever the last time I was up there competing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm hoping it's tough because it seems like every year the Diamond Nationals is the same Saturday as my instructor's tournament in Fargo. For like the last 10 years, they've been that same weekend. Even like 1 year, my instructor was like, thought he had to change it. And I'm like, oh, good, good. And then he's like, no, we get the same weekend. I'm, dang it. Because I want to go down and watch them and stuff. And, you know, we're a teacher to promote my show and promote my podcast also. But
absolutely,
also,
yeah.
But I also want to, you know, support my instructor's tournament and show up there and stuff. So it's kind of tough. So I'm hoping maybe one of these years I'll get to go back down there and watch and see how much it's changed since I was there 24 years ago.
I was actually surprised. Like it actually hasn't changed a whole lot.
Okay.
Or at least it didn't, like, I mean, and of course, you know, 10 years gone from the last time I was there, but I was surprised that it hadn't changed.
Did they add an extra day to it now? Because when I first started going, it was just, you know, the Friday night was just the seminars and stuff, like, you know, the Bill Super Football seminar and all the competition was on Saturday. But don't they have, isn't Friday almost a full day of competition now?
Yes.
Okay. So it's gotten a lot bigger then.
Yeah, it got bigger. They added, you know, way more divisions and they're trying to, you know, make it, I would say, equitable. So they're splitting out, you know, styles and and non-bladed and yeah, so it does make for kind of a long couple of days, but you know, at the end of it, like more people get to be showcased.
I think. Maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe if I'll drive down for the Friday, then I can come back for my tournament the Saturday. So at least make an appearance.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Friday's big because that's all like the team competitions are Fridays.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Might have to do that.
That's a fun time.
That could be fun. All right. So in all your years of martial arts, worst martial arts related injury.
Okay. All right. So what had happened was walking through a ring, right? And somebody called my name and I like turned too fast and I sort of pulled my groin muscle.
So it wasn't even competing?
It wasn't even competing, man. Like I always tell everybody, like, nobody gets really hurt doing martial arts. It's everything else they do. Like people get hurt rollerblading or snowboarding or what. Mm-hmm. I got hurt turning.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My worst martial arts one was a broken toe. That was it. I was doing a double jump front kick, breaking two boards and didn't pull one of my toes back far enough and jammed it right in and broke my toe. So
it's a cool injury though. Like that's awesome. Like I would have to make up a really good story. Like, yeah, I went up to kick this girl in the head and she like lifted my foot up. So I was in the full splits in the air and then I landed backwards on a chair or something. But yeah, no.
Well, it's better than my actual worst injury that had nothing to do with martial arts. It was the day before my 16th birthday. So the day before my driver's license test in high school gym class, playing kickball, running for home base, and the guy threw the ball at me and threw it at my feet tripped me, and my knee bent about 45 degrees the wrong direction, and I completely tore my lateral meniscus, my ACL.
That's bad.
And there was many years when I told people I got in a gang fight just to sound cool. Yeah, there's like six guys that jumped me, and the last one got the best of me. So yeah, that was, you know, that affected my martial arts career. But
big time.
Yeah, but I think I fractured a knuckle one time, and I've had a few sprains in martial arts. I've sprained ankles and stuff like that. But yeah, I fractured a knuckle and broken toe are my two worst ones.
Ooh, what were you punching when you fractured your knuckle?
It was
board again.
It was another board break.
Dang those boards!
I know. I wasn't holding my hand right. And I like, I don't know if I just turned it at the last second and it just hit like one knuckle instead of two and just fractured that knuckle. So
at least it was the proper knuckle, right?
Yeah. So I taped it up and did the break this time and then let it heal afterwards.
Sweet.
So, probably not the smartest thing to do, but what? It was during my black belt test. I wasn't going to let that stop me. So
exactly. Yeah. No, no, you're good. Yeah. Drink some water, rub some dirt in it, change your socks, whatever you got to do, man.
Exactly.
Get back in there.
So now I know National Karate, that, you know, that spun off from the Junri system. And one thing Junri was really big on was philosophy. So I'm not sure how much National Karate really pushed the philosophy side, but you personally, in all your years of martial arts, is there one philosophy you picked up or learned or developed yourself that really stands out for you?
I think it's evolved into being a lifelong learner. I think, or humility. Let's say humility.
Okay.
One of my favorite quotes, and I have it up right next to my front door, is, you know, that the Bruce Lee one: absorb what is useful, discard what is useless, and add what is uniquely your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that one because, you know, everybody, you have something to learn from everybody.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if they're older or younger or a higher belt or a lower belt or from a different style or from a different, like you can learn something from everybody. And I think it's important to remember that.
All right, I got a few fun questions to wrap it up. Now, this one doesn't have to be four. I've had people give as few as two and as many as eight. But who are maybe 3, 4, 5 names you would put on your personal Mount Rushmore of martial arts?
Lord have mercy. I would put Master Daman up there.
Okay.
John Valera.
Nice.
Man, have you seen the John Wick movies?
Not all of them.
Freaking love. Yeah. You can see him. You can see John Valera on the screen. I'm like, I know that guy. Like every time I go in, I'm like, I know that guy. See, I look at all the stunt performers' names. Like, I know that guy and that guy and that guy. Like, so that, I think that's amazing that he's made that the move in the career. I love seeing him up there. Let's see. People who everybody else would know. My favorite MMA fighter has always been Lyoto Machida.
Nice.
And oh man, Donnie Yen.
Nice.
He and Michelle Yeoh, like I don't even have to talk to them, but if I could just stand next to them for like 5 minutes, my life would be complete.
Like I got to interview Diana Leon Asanto, who was good friends with Michelle Yeoh, and she talked about her and stuff, and like, wow, that's cool.
I would love to talk to her. I would love to talk to Shannon Lee.
Yep, she's on my list. Diana was a phenomenal interview. And I actually interviewed her husband a few weeks ago. I interviewed Diana last year and her husband just a few weeks ago. So, and I put requests in for Michelle Yeoh and Donnie Yen, but obviously no response as of yet. But fingers crossed.
It's coming, man. It's coming.
I'm hoping. It would be cool. It'd be really, really cool. No, I've been lucky. People keep saying yes. I think I've had total ever, like 2 people ever say no. About doing an interview.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
170 into it, right? Practically. Yeah. So that's
pretty much if I get a response, they usually say, I had a few that said, I had one that said no. I had messaged him before the show started. I recorded 24 episodes and had them fully produced before I released an episode.
Wow.
And he was going to be like the 25th or 26th one. He's a fairly well-known actor. He's done some Hollywood stuff and some TV shows, some movies. And he said no, just because he didn't know who I was and whatever. And about a year into my show, I've sent him another message and said, hey, I know you don't want to do the interview, but you might know some of these people. Some of them are friends of yours and you might enjoy just listening to the interviews, and sent him the link to my website. He responds back 10 minutes later. He goes, that's an impressive guest list. How does next Tuesday work for you? So,
yeah,
that was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. But I had one, I can't remember her name. There's a lady who I want to say she's like a CEO of some company, very big, very multimillionaire, stuff like that. I had never heard of her, but I was researching people who do martial arts and her name came up and cool. She said no. So no answer or whatever. She just, not interested. She was nice. She just said not interested. So that's cool. Might try her again in a year or two and maybe her mind will change. So who knows? All right. How about a favorite martial arts book?
It just left my brain. It's not necessarily a martial arts book, but there's martial arts in it.
Okay.
Iron and Silk.
Okay. I've heard of that.
Mark Salzman. And it's a collection. They tell it as a as a memoir about his experiences living in China. It's a collection of essays and stories that he collected. And he did train with Pan Qingfu, and the stories of him training are exceptional.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard, I've never, one or two other guests have mentioned it, I think. That's why I know I've heard of it, but I haven't read it yet. So I'll have to add it to my list.
Entertaining, highly entertaining.
Cool. All right. So you're around the same age as me. We grew up around the same time. I mean, we're about a year apart. So I'm hoping you have an answer for this one. Favorite martial arts video game. Did you ever get into video games?
I did.
Nice.
I would say Street Fighter was cool, but you want to know what I did once?
Yeah.
My brother got the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And he has boxing on it.
Nice. Yep. I've done that.
And you know, dude, and you know, with Wii, all you got to do is like move, wiggle your wrist and the thing, like you will box the guy. Yeah. Right? My brother and I, we started out, you know, 6 feet away from the television. By the end, we were 3 inches away from the television, just like freaking going at it. Body blow, this, good, overhand, right? And like, we were, his kids and mine were very worried about the two of us.
That's awesome. I know a few times with our kids, we had to pull it like, you're too close to the TV. You're going to hit it with the Wii controller. Like, back up, back up.
We were there. We were there.
Yep.
It was fun.
Yeah, I did Wii boxing a few times. I enjoyed Wii bowling a little more, but I definitely did Wii boxing. And how about a favorite martial arts TV show?
Martial arts TV, like a strictly martial arts TV show?
I mean, I've had people pick Green Hornet, Kung Fu, Into the Badlands, Sidekicks with Ernie Reyes Jr. I mean, there's so many.
You know, I grew up watching Kung Fu with David Carradine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up watching that. So I guess that would probably be my first experience with it. I knew a couple of the people who did the fighting on Into the Badlands, and that was cool.
Such a cool show. That ended way too soon.
Oh, man. I was like, is this, that's the end? That's it? Yeah. I don't understand. But why? Yes, that was great. I just finished watching The Brother's Son. I'm so sorry that didn't get renewed.
I know. I saw that last week. What do you mean no season two? That was such a good show.
It was
so good.
Yes, it was really good. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, those would be up there.
Have you watched Warrior yet? The new series?
Oh, no, I have not.
First of all, you need to. Especially if you have Netflix. It just hit Netflix. And they're talking of adding a fourth season. So a little background, if you don't know about it, it was Shannon Lee's the executive producer. And it was based on Bruce Lee's original notes for the Kung Fu show that was developed for Bruce Lee originally.
Oh.
So it's kind of like her vision on what she thought her dad wanted Kung Fu to be. And it's phenomenal. It's, yeah, I think it was on, might have been on AMC originally. But yeah, just hit Netflix like 2 weeks ago. And all three seasons are on there. And it's good. It's really good.
Oh, okay. She was probably talking about that the last time I heard her on the Drunken Taoist podcast.
Yep. I heard that one. Yep. I think she was.
I think that was it. Okay. I'll have to watch that.
Yeah. If you liked those shows, you'll enjoy it. It's really good. It's one of my favorites.
Awesome.
All right. How about a favorite martial arts movie?
Favorite martial arts movie. Oh, jeepers. That's a tough one too, man. This is hard. It shouldn't be that hard. I should be able to rattle off like 12 of them. I feel like a terrible martial artist right now, Brian.
I know, but yeah, someone like me, I'm a movie buff. I could probably rattle off 30 easily. But the thing, like the favorite one, mine never changes. Mine's The Karate Kid, because that's the movie that launched my martial arts journey. I literally, that one for me is easy. But then, number two probably changes. You know, Best of the Best, Bloodsport, Only the Strong, Perfect Weapon. You know, there's a lot of those that I watch over and over and over and over again. So.
What do I watch over? I would watch The Karate Kid over and over. I have definitely watched Only the Strong over and over.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love Mark Dacascos. I'm actually going to be interviewing him soon.
Brian, that's awesome. That's so amazing.
I literally just interviewed his dad last week.
Really?
Yeah, Al. His episode will come out right before yours. So he's episode 165. He was super cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, Mark, he is one of those people that, like, he's sort of, I feel like he's not under the radar, but he sort of is, you know?
Yeah.
But he was my favorite dude on Hawaii Five-0.
Yep. Yeah. I feel Only the Strong is very underrated because only, like, diehard martial arts people know what it is, I think.
Exactly.
And anytime I have someone watch it, they're like, that was really good. Well, I haven't ever heard of it.
Drive. Drive is my favorite.
Nice.
There we go. Thank you.
Okay. There we go. That's a good movie.
I remember sometimes. Yeah. Yep. Drive is my definite. That would be my favorite one.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, a final question. This one does not have to be a martial arts movie. Any movie you've ever seen, favorite movie fight scene? And it can't be the one you choreographed. So,
I think it would be just about anything on the movie Bullet Train.
Oh, nice. That was so good. It's such a good movie.
That was one of those things, you know, you watch and it's so freaking gory. Like in the middle of the, I think it was when he got freaking like sliced in half. And I was like, damn, like out real loud in the movie theater. Anything that can make you do that. I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yeah. That's one where I didn't really know what to expect going in.
No.
And I went on, I'm like, I want to go again right now.
Right. Yes. Those were some really just good scenes and good fight scenes. Yeah.
And funny. Just funny. Movie. Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely one of my favorites when it came out. I was very much enjoyed it. I'm actually hoping, I don't know how or why, but I hope they make a sequel just because.
Totally. Just because, right? Exactly. Just gratuitous. Like, just give me whatever again.
One of those movies that doesn't need a sequel, but I would watch it in a heartbeat.
Heck yeah, man. For sure.
That is cool. Well, Catherine, before I let you go, anything that maybe I didn't get a chance to ask you or you just want to make sure we get out there before we wrap up? And I'll put links for you know, Fit 15 and anything else you need me to when the episode comes out for sure.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. No, I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and answer some questions. I think this has been really fun. Hopefully, you know, I said good things. Any parting thoughts? Like if I were to leave people with one thought, it would be to find an art and study it, especially for kids and especially now. And make sure you don't treat it like an activity, because I think a lot of people, like especially around here, it's just about how many things you have your kids in.
Yeah.
And the martial arts isn't like that. It's a pursuit.
Yeah.
And it's something that you study and it's something that you live. And I think that kids nowadays need something that is going to ground them in the power of who they are, not just the power of their body or what they contribute to a team. It is what they give themselves and how they love themselves enough to better themselves.
That's cool. I like that. That's a great way to end it. Well, I just have to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. This has been so much fun. It's always fun talking to people that I actually used to watch compete. You know, I know I saw you a handful of times at the Diamonds back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I said, the only in the 90s, the only year I wasn't there was 97 because I lived in California that year. But otherwise, I was there.
My year too.
Yeah, I know. And I thought about coming back from California just to go, and I'm like, I can't afford that. Yeah. So actually, I moved to California to train in American Kenpo. So I was focusing on while I was out there, working two or three jobs at the time to pay for everything.
Oh, do you have an episode where you tell your story? Because now I'm really curious.
Actually, yes, episode one. So actually, technically, it's not episode one. What I did, so for people that don't understand podcasting, and I kind of explain it in the episode, is that when you do a new podcast and when you first released your first episode, it takes a while for it to hit all the apps, like to hit Apple Music and Spotify and all the other podcast apps. So a lot of people will do either a intro episode or a trailer. That the like okay. Almost like a movie trailer. So I was going to do a trailer since I had 24 episodes recorded already. And instead I just decided to have a buddy of mine who's also a martial artist and also worked in radio with me in podcasting. I just had him interview me. And that's kind of the preview episode. So it's the very, very first one. If you scroll all the way back on my website, right before episode one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was fun to do. And like I said, I've told bits of my story on many parts, many different episodes and stuff, but that's kind of the whole thing is as far as back when we started it. So recorded that about 3 years ago and that's kind of me. But yeah, it's like I said, I started around 2 years before you. I started in 84 in Tungsudo when I was 10 years old. And like I said, owe it all to the Karate Kid. I mean, literally walked out of the movie theater and the Tungsudo instructor was handing out free passes.
Heck yeah. I'm there. You know what? I love the Jackie Chan one too. I thought he made the best Mr. Miyagi character.
See, I wasn't a fan of that one.
Oh, really?
And that's probably because I was such a fan of the original.
Mm. I mean, nobody can replace Pat Morita for sure. But
and I'm so on the fence because the new movie that's coming out later this year has Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio in it. So they're combining the two worlds.
Oh, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I know. And I'm such a fan of Cobra Kai. I watch it with my daughter and stuff, and I loved it just for the nostalgia and everything. And
that was a great, like, for my ex-husband was like, I don't like it because it's kids hurting kids. It's like, but you have to think of it as like one of the old kung fu shows where it's like the 100 flowers, and it's just the different schools going around being like, your kung fu sucks. Now yep. I'm going to challenge you to a battle. Like, and you just have to think of it like that.
Exactly. It's fun. I mean, yeah. It's a movie. It's fictional. I mean, people aren't going to get their black belt in 3 months and win a tournament. It's you right. But it's the other stuff. It's the philosophy. And the big thing with Cobra Kai is just the, you know, the nostalgia, the original characters. And I love Johnny.
I thought he had the best story arc.
Yes. And I've been lucky. I've had two people that have been on Cobra Kai on my show and two or three that were in the original Karate Kid series. So been very, very, Sean Kanan from Karate Kid 3, Karate's bad boy, Mike Barnes. Mm-hmm. I had, let's see who else. Oh, I had Sensei Fumio Demura, who was Pat Morita's stunt double.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. And I just interviewed a few weeks ago, Ron Thomas, who played, he was Tommy, and he was the reverend or the pastor Cobra Kai. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just interviewed him. And so, yeah, I've been lucky reminiscing with those guys about, you know, Karate Kid stuff. I mean, Fumio Demura, that's one episode I highly recommend you go listen to. That was, he's hilarious.
I found a new thing to want to binge now.
He's funny. Sure. He tells some very, very funny stories about mm-hmm. making that and stuff, and just super, super cool guy. So yeah, it's nice. It's fun. No, seriously, this has been such a blast, and your episode should be out. Let me look at my calendar, May 9th.
How fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a
Mother's Day. Can do.
There we go. Happy Mother's
right
Day.
Right on. Thank you.
Cool. So yeah, I'm excited. And once it comes out, I will be in touch.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist. We hope you will join us every week for a brand new episode with a different martial artist telling their story. If you enjoy the show, be sure to leave us a review. Also, be sure to check out our website at everydaymartialartist.com. There you can find all of our episodes and contact us to suggest guests and ask questions. Again, thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist, and we'll see you next week.